Welcome to Cultimatum, the podcast uncovering the dark realities of cults and human trafficking. I'm your host, Anonymous Andrew, and each week we dive deep into the manipulation, control, and courageous escapes that define these worlds.
And I'm Melody, Andrew's co-host. Having experienced the depth of a cult firsthand, specifically the House of Yahweh, I am here as an advocate for fellow survivors.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests are their own and do not reflect the official policy or position of Cultimatum or its affiliates. The content discussed on this podcast are based on personal experiences and should not be construed as factual or legal advice. Neither the host nor the guest are liable for any statements made during the episodes. Listeners are encouraged to conduct their own research and seek professional advice where appropriate.
And before we dive into today's episode, we want to issue a trigger warning. Some episodes may cover explicit and potentially disturbing subjects such as sexual abuse, rape, human trafficking, suicide, and other sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Cultimatum Podcast, a culture of cults and human trafficking. And my name is Anonymous Andrew. And tonight with me is my co-host, Melody. Hello, Melody.
Hello, Andrew. Today, we're diving into the world of Seventh-day Adventist Church once again with our guest, Elisa. Elisa was raised in the Seventh-day Adventist faith and spent her formative years in a private boarding academy, including Mount Ellis Academy in the 1990s. She remained in the church until 2011, when at the age of 35, she made the difficult decision to leave. She's now speaking out on TikTok, shedding light on the church's doomsday teachings, their unique and rigid interpretations of the Bible, and the impact of growing up in an environment shaped by fear and control. Elisa, welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're excited to hear your story.
Yes, welcome, Elisa. Yes, very excited. Take us to where you'd like to start.
Okay. Well, I am a fourth generation Adventist. Sometimes I may refer to the Seventh-day Adventist Church as the SDA, just because it helps, Adventist. Yeah, on both sides of my family, I have Adventism. In fact, my parents and both parents went to the boarding academies, and he died close to 103 years old, but my grandpa also went to academy, and all of his kids. So it's pretty deep in my family. We live in Wyoming. And so I did go to Mount Ellis Academy, and I was lucky enough to spend a semester at Hawaiian Mission Academy my junior year. And so that was some of the fun things, I guess, associated with Adventism. But I would say Adventists they have two sources of inspiration. They have the Bible, and then we also have a prophet that they call her. Her name was Ellen White, which is different from a lot of the different cults as a woman, which in fact, like, that is the kind of the weird thing now, is that they talk against women holding any sort of authority in the church now, even though
Ellen White was the woman, Melody, help me out here, was the woman that also was exposed to mercury, and we think that had something. Yes, okay.
That's the same Ellen White. The Mad Hatter. Yeah, the Mad Hatter thing. Okay. And she was the one who was hit in the head when she was 9 years old by another girl as they were walking home from school. And she was in a coma for 3 weeks and very, very sick. And that was kind of the basis for why they believed that she was a prophet, because she had all of these supernatural things happen to her when she was about 17, 18 years old. Not only was she saved miraculously, she only had a third grade education because she was so sick after the brain injury. But when she was 17, she started having all of these visions and these miraculous things that, when I was growing up, I was just told that this was to preserve the remnant church for the end times message, that God always through time has always had prophets and to be able to lead people to truth, and to, especially in these times that we're living in as a doomsday cult. Now I call, it's a cult, but I believed that how lucky are we that we had a special messenger that God used so that we could get through these times. And we were told, not only especially her being hit in the head with the rock. But when one of her early visions, she was purported to have held up a 25 or 28 pound Bible up over her head for over 30 minutes. And she was very sickly and very small and frail. And so that was like the supernatural thing, that it could have only been God that gave her these visions. And it was manifested in such a way that it proved that she was a true prophet of God. And that's kind of what laid the claim for the Adventist Church to get behind her. And now I know, though, in doing a lot of research and really looking into the accounts of those early days, this was it started in 1844, but then the church actually began officially in 1863. During those interim times, there was a lot of things that were happening, and she was confirming all of the different doctrines of, you know, different ideas that people had as far as different doctrines that were different than just mainstream Christianity. And she would then have these visions to confirm whether that doctrine was right or wrong. And it took a little bit of time before the church was officially put together in 1863, but she had a lot of those supposed miraculous visions, including there was a doctor that he wrote about putting his hand up above her mouth while she was in vision and said that she wasn't breathing at all and that there was no breath coming. She was basically just catatonic, or she wasn't breathing, and how, you know, miraculous this was. So
what was some of her visions back in the 1800s? Also, when did the doomsday aspect come into play? Like, did she start predicting the end of the world there, or was that much later
It started with the end of the world. They were a part of the Millerite movement. So William Miller at we now call it the Great Disappointment, in October 22nd of 1844, when he predicted that Christ would come back on earth based off of a prophecy that is the 2300-day prophecy of Daniel, 8:12 or something. And he said that Christ was going to cleanse the earth, and meaning thinking that he was coming back then based off of that prophecy. And of course, there were 100,000 people, followers, and Ellen White's family was one of them. And they were a part of that whole thing. And of course, the great disappointment happened. The very next day, one of the followers had a vision that they got the event wrong. They got the date right, but they got the event wrong. And that vision was meaning that Christ actually, instead of coming to cleanse the earth, he went from the holy place in the heavenly sanctuary to the most holy place. And so this is one of the damning doctrines that is different than any other church. It's called the investigative judgment. And that's what that means, is that Christ is in the most holy place and he is investigating everybody's books of salvation, if you are worthy to be saved or not. And that's where it kind of brings into the legalism, because everybody has to, every night or as soon as you sin, you have to ask for forgiveness for the sin, because Christ is then, you know, all of your deeds and misdeeds go down in the book, and he's investigating your books at this time. And when your name happens to come up as he's investigating in the heavenly most holies of holies, if you haven't asked for forgiveness for all of those sins, you're not worthy to be saved.
Okay. Okay.
It's insane. It's crazy.
Thank you. So the thought or preaching is that God or Jesus is sitting in this space somewhere, and that when you commit a sin, he writes it down. And if you don't ask for forgiveness of that sin, you're damned.
Yes, yes. If he comes to your name in the book while he's investigating right now, if he comes to your name and you have not asked for forgiveness for those sins, then you're damned.
Not too uncommon from the Roman Catholic Church, because I remember as a kid and adolescent years, I went to confession, and confession was just that. You went in and you told the priest what you did that week that was wrong or against the Ten Commandments.
Right.
Although we weren't told that if we didn't confess that we would be damned, but it's kind of like the same thing, I guess, confession.
It is. It's kind of like that. There are some similarities. It's just interesting because, I mean, it's like any other cult, like the use of these specific doctrines that are different than mainstream Christianity or whatever, you know, like then they are twisting, because it comes from a vision or a prophet in our time, then they are looking through the lens, when they read their Bible, they are looking through the lens of that vision or that to make the Bible fit instead of the other way around, instead of looking at the Bible and going like, this is insane. This is crazy. And so that, I mean, that's the thing that's so sad about it. But now after I finally felt like it took me a good 10 years to feel like after leaving, it felt like it was about 10 years where I felt like I could finally think properly and I could see clearly. And now looking at all of these other cults that use the same tactics, some of the, obviously the points of doctrine are different and all of that, but they use the same things. There's fear factor. There's the manipulation of scripture, interpretation, misinterpretation of scripture, control of information, fear factors within the church for questioning. I mean, we were told that if Ellen White actually had lots of writings about if you questioned her testimonies, she called her stuff testimonies so that it would jive with the revelation. There's a verse that says that the end time remnant church will keep the commandments of Jesus and will have the testimonies. And instead of the testimonies of Jesus, she put herself in that as the end time church will have her testimonies instead of just Jesus, and our own testimonies with him and
okay,
what he did on the earth.
Let's go back to the confession. I'm just curious. You confess, who do you confess to?
To Jesus, to God.
So it's a silent, you can pray and just confess?
Yes.
Or do you have to be like, because we had to go to this booth and
right. This
priest would open up this door and you see this kind of what was weird. But at the end, when I say, Father, bless me for I have sinned. I teased my sister this week. This is the kind of stuff that we had. He would say, for your penance, go say 3 Hail Marys. Did they have anything like that? Or you just...
No, there wasn't anything that you had to jump through hoops to do. It was more like, if you really love God, you're going to keep his commandments, and keeping his commandments keep you from sinning. And so Jesus, their belief is another damning doctrine is called the Great Controversy. And what that is that Jesus is essentially on trial in the cosmos, and Satan is accusing him that the law cannot be kept and that the law is just ridiculous and it's just too hard and all this stuff. And so their belief is, based off of Ellen White's visions, is that Jesus then went to God the Father and said, please let me go to the earth to offer myself as the final sacrifice. And in doing so, I can prove that the law can be kept. So a lot of times we would, I remember very distinctly, I was probably 3 years old and I was in our bathroom, and I had just gotten a spanking because I had done something very naughty. And my mom went through this whole thing about how sad Jesus is to see me do these things and how just like I'm breaking his heart because he died for us to show that we can be good and that we can. So basically it's a perfection teaching and it's all legalism, perfection. You basically kind of, we were so indoctrinated with all of our, we would call them Sabbath school. So instead of Sunday school, we went to Sabbath school on Saturday, and all of the teaching was all about the Sabbath because it's in the Ten Commandments, and, helping Jesus and loving God by keeping the Ten Commandments.
And I remember distinctly being told that Jesus did come down to offer himself to his Father. It's been many, many years since I've been in the Catholic Church, but it was something along those lines. Jesus came down to help our sins. He took all our sins away, something like that. Okay.
Well, right. I will say that along the same lines with your teachings, I'm an ex-member of the House of Yahweh, and their teaching was that the Messiah came back, and we called him Yeshua, but the Messiah came back to fulfill the law, not to abolish it. And they do use scriptural reference for that. But I did want to jump back real quick to ask a question. Do they have an explanation, or do they give an explanation for why they don't allow women to be in a teaching or an authority position, and yet the prophet of their whole religion was a woman? Do they give any explanation for that?
They give you know, I've questioned this many times, and it really depends on who is the leader of the church, who is the president on the top spot of the church. It just depends on what they are putting out at the time. It's kind of just, it's just washed underneath, kind of put underneath the rug, you know, which I will say that in Adventism, there are really fundamental Adventists, and there are more conservative, more really, really fundamental. Then there's kind of the conservatives, and then there's the ones who they kind of believe in Ellen White, but they try to only go to the Bible, which is, I was kind of between those two, probably the conservative and the ones who, you know, like we did try to just go to the Bible, even though we were looking through everything through, you know, the lens of Ellen White. And then of course you have the more liberal Adventists that they don't necessarily ascribe to all of these things. My thing, and it kind of drives me nuts, because a lot of my content that I put out is trying to show just the contradictions and all of that, because it doesn't make any sense. And in fact, Ellen White herself says that, you know, if you take out any of her visions or any of her inspired writings that were given to her by God, you know, then you're not an Adventist in any way, shape, or form. And in fact, if you don't believe in her, then you are of the world and you have been deceived by Satan. And even if you pray, your prayers are going to Satan. They're not, you know, they're not going anywhere. So, you know, it doesn't make any sense that there are all these different variations of Adventists.
They adjusted it to whenever it needed to fit their agenda. I remember to this day, because I just watched something on TV not too long ago that had a lot of backstory to priests and nuns. So in the Catholic Church, nuns did do the preachings a lot, because when I went to school, all the teachers were nuns, and the priests were actually deathly afraid of some of the nuns, because some of these, the mother superior, and they were pretty nasty. They were the ones, and I watched something the other day where when the priest said, you know, watch out for Mother Jane or something, whatever. So the women, and even though no women can be priests in the Catholic Church, they are given a higher
authority.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, some sort of authority.
Weird, very strange. Okay.
Yeah, she was definitely given authority. And it is kind of interesting that in our church, we live in rural Wyoming, and we had one pastor for seven different churches over lots and lots of miles, a couple of mountain ranges even. So we actually were all, every one of us did a lot in our church. It isn't like a church that you just sit in the pews and they hire some big shot pastor or, you know, something like that. It's very much so everybody's doing everything. Everybody's taking part in some way. And my husband taught Sabbath school lessons. I played the piano every week since I was nine. You know, like we did a lot of different things. And part of my story is that I never thought that of before coming out of this cult, I never thought that it was a cult, but that it was about the 2008 timeframe, 2007 timeframe, we had a woman in our church that took over our church from within. And this was a woman, and she made herself elder, and she started preaching all the time because our pastors weren't available and were sick. So then she kind of took it upon herself to save all of us and to make sure that we wouldn't be deceived by the world's teaching, and which is anything else, you know, anything that isn't within the Adventist. And then she started like reading all the Adventist material and correcting the Adventist material and writing out her own lessons and her own sermons. And so we also have this, what I call, I mean, during those years, it was about 2 years of heavy, heavy under a cult leader it was the worst time of our life. And she destroyed us. And so it is kind of interesting to also have that, where even though the church doesn't officially, but because we didn't really have any leaders at that time, the only leader that stepped forward was this woman. And then she became a really
horrible. So you were like
horrible
in a cult, inside a cult.
Yes, we were. And it was horrible. Leaving Adventism was tough enough to peel back all those layers of onions, you know, like when I finally left. But I will say that those 2 years with her being that oppressive cult leader, it took me 3 years after she left finally our church to even feel like I could even think for myself again at all. And because I kind of grew up, I was fairly strong. I was indoctrinated. but I was fairly strong. And I really felt like, you know, that God was going to show me the truth. And if it happened to be different from what I was reading, I wasn't going to believe what I was reading. I felt like I was pretty grounded in ways and confident. And after going through that time with her, I tell you, I lost all my confidence. I write, and I couldn't write for, I think it was 8 years before I picked up writing again at all. That was a really difficult time. And that was kind of the beginning of about 5 years of just hell, lots of different things happening that eventually led us out of the church. And at the end of those 5 years, I think we had 6 different things that happened that were just really bad. That's when I finally realized that, okay, we're not just changing the church from the inside out. The Holy Spirit is not with this church at all. It's evil, as they are protecting the church above everybody else, above abuse of, I mean, we had embezzlement. We had lots of different things that happened during that time. And that was kind of the beginning of the end for me. Now I'm thankful for it, but boy, it was painful going through it. And then I thought I would just have to deconstruct through those 5 kind of traumas that we went through. But once I left the church, I realized, wow, like every doctrine is not in the Bible, and it's not anywhere, like it's just manipulation. So that kind of started the ball rolling of you looking
into all the other teachings of the more less culty versions of the SDA that you were exposed to in your younger years.
Right. That I didn't even know were wrong, you know, or that right. I really thought that I had a great upbringing. But now looking back on it, I mean, there's vegetarianism is Ellen White calls it like the health message. And I remember when I was little, like I adored my grandpa, and he ate lunch meat sandwiches, and I wanted lunch meat sandwiches like him. And I remember asking my mom, you know, if I could have some meat like grandpa, and went in to tell me how, like, the only reason why we're allowed to eat meat is so it will kill our bodies faster. And wow. how like bad stuff. And it all comes from Ellen White, and, you know, kind of the Kellogg, if you know the Kellogg, Dr. Kellogg's story.
Yeah, I know some of it. We actually have interviewed a couple other Seventh-day Adventists. So we've heard some bits and parts, but I've heard Kellogg's name a couple of times. And I know he's the Kellogg from Michigan. I'm from Michigan, so I think Battle Creek or something, if I remember.
Yes.
And I know a little bit about that part of his, because he's associated with the SDA as well, correct? Yeah.
He grew up as SDN. And in fact, Ellen White, they paid for her and her husband paid for him to go to get his doctoring degree. And then they started the sanitarium under Ellen White until they had a falling out. But yeah, I just remember at that time, you know, little thinking like, okay, but this is my grandpa. Like, how could he be sinning? I mean, mom was saying that, like, when we are translated to heaven, there will not be any flesh meat in them, in your stomachs at all. And so why not just not eat meat? And I remember thinking like, but my grandpa is the best person I know. How can he be willfully sinning and willfully doing something that's killing him? And that was probably one of the first times that the cognitive dissonance. He was, although he came into it with my grandma as a second marriage.
Okay.
So kind of reluctantly.
Okay. See, like, was conformed. He wasn't raised in it,
correct.
Or okay.
Right. Which makes a big difference, particularly with that belief. Eating meat, of course, we kept
for ahead. Sure. And I was going to say that. And the thing is that there's a big difference when you've experienced something else, right? And you're coming into a group like this, like you were raised in this. You had no frame of reference. You had no experience with anything else. He was coming in after the fact and had other influence in his life. So that makes a big difference
on
the decisions you make and kind of the things you're willing to follow and maybe, you know, still wanting your bologna sandwich or whatever.
Yeah, right. Well, and it is, you know, as most cult people that have been raised in a cult, most people say it was their identity. And it was like, we didn't have outside friends growing up. We only were at church for church functions. That's why they have Adventist schools are so heavily pushed, is that, you know, you don't want to be anywhere that the world can influence you and deceive
right.
you, which, you know, is that's pretty much all of them that right. you hear oh, about. Yeah. And they also, which is why we went away to academy at 14. I remember my parents coming to us, my brother and I, and saying, when my older brother turned 12, they sat us down and said, okay, now you are, it is time for you to start making all of your own decisions because wow. you'll be leaving the house at 14. So now we are not going to be telling you what to do so much and all this stuff. And I think that's one of the most damaging things that can happen because they take kids away from their family structure and, you know, and the indoctrination is even deeper.
Right.
Along with all of the, I mean, we lived in dorms and my freshman year was just hell on earth. It was horrible. And I mean, I write poetry and looking back on some of my poems, I was suicidal. I was talking about cutting. I was talking about there's no way out, like help me for I have sinned. All I can do is kill myself, you know, things like that. Thankfully,
was this mostly based on the religious beliefs, like the loathing part of the teaching, the guilt that they had instilled in you? Or was there something specifically going on in school that was causing some of that? Or
I think it was both. Now, looking back, like I did not have a lot of self-worth. I went to, obviously, elementary school in a very small Christian school, and there was only, well, Adventist school. And there was only one other girl in my grade, and she was horrible to me. Like, your dog is ugly. You know, like stuff like that. Like, I couldn't do anything right. And so I, growing up through that time, I struggled pretty hard with just who I was, but it was just a given that there was nowhere to go, that I had no other option.
Right.
I had to be around this girl. She was at church. She was my only age. Right. So we had to be around each other 24/7. And the first time that I remember really realizing this was I was being really bullied. Like, I was reading the Bible in our Sabbath school class. And I don't know how old I was, but I was pretty young. I was reading the Bible after I had been, you know, asked to read a passage, and I mispronounced a word in the Bible, and the kids would just like laugh and just like say things under their breath. And like, that happened all the time. And those are the things that I remember the most, of just being like humiliated, because these were right. older kids too. And I finally went to my parents after this had been going on for a long time. And I knew I wasn't doing very well. I was crying every day, just feeling terrible, but I couldn't figure out what it was. I was too young to really, you know, figure that out. And I right. tried to talk to my parents about it, and they let me come up in the adult Sabbath school class with them upstairs in just our sanctuary and sit with them instead of go to the Sabbath school, the kids' Sabbath school class. Within about, I think I did it maybe 3 weeks in a row. And by that third week, they had called an all church meeting to discuss why I was sitting with the adults. And they forced my parents to send me back to Sabbath school class. And I remember just like crying, like, you mean I can't, you know? And I remember now in my soul, I think that was the first time where it was like, you know, the church comes above you, the yep. church name, the, like, we are not, and your parents are not protecting you. You have nobody, like, you have no place
right.
that you can be safe here. And it kind of started the own just trauma. And, you know, there were other things. There were a lot of other things that kind of happened in my growing up time, but just being around kids that weren't nice. And there was some sexual abuse that had happened and things too. And my parents knew about it, but they didn't actually do anything about it at all. And I wow. love my parents. I think they were, but they also were in a system it was very, like, they were told what you could do and what you couldn't do. And one of those things wasn't to right. raise a stink and not put the name of the church out there in any sort of bad light at all. So
oh, yeah.
Yes. So going into academy then, I very much so was just a mess in my mind. And I was so excited, though, because when you grow up in Adventism, you can't take part in any like community events or sports or anything like that. And I loved to play baseball. I was very athletic. And we had our own little elementary, you know, PE time that I just loved baseball. And I wanted so bad to be on this gymnastics team that was a part of the academies. A lot of the academies in those times, they had something called acronastics, which was like acrobatics and gymnastics combined. And the kids would tour. They would actually go from state to state and all over. And it was really, it was awesome. And I see now that like they, all of the academies were just to try to keep everybody from experiencing anything outside, you know, their system. But the other thing is when there's, you know, baseball games or basketball games on Friday night or Saturday, yep, in the, yep, world, you know, that it was an alternative for kids to be able to be involved. And so I was so excited to go. I wasn't even homesick when I first went because I did make the gymnastics team and, you know, I started out pretty strong and then some girls decided that they needed to destroy my life that first year. So, and I got jumped in the hallway and I had to fight off like 7 or 8 girls trying to take me in to give me a swirly and cold showers and just little things like that that was happening all the time. So once that
and that's
ended,
traumatic. And if it's a boarding school, too, that you have no, you're not even going home at night. So you don't even have the safe haven of going home at night and feeling some safety of home.
Exactly. Well, my husband said that. He said when he was growing up, he was getting punched in the stomach or something on the bus. And he said, you know, but the difference was, is that I went home and I had my bed. I had my parents to talk to about that. And yeah, and we even had, some of these girls, they had a master key to all of the girls' rooms that in the dorm room. And my one place that I thought that I could at least get away was my room, my only room that I could lock my door, you know, and several times I would unlock my door and there's 4 girls in my space and just like they'd gotten in just to give me hell.
Now, do you have any clue as to why one of the students would have one of these master keys? Shouldn't that have been an adult that would have access to that, not a student?
Well, they were boys. Everybody had to work. And like when you went there, you worked to be able to take off some of your tuition to stay there. So we didn't ever get any money. I never had cash from any work that I did at all. It went right directly to the school for our tuition. And everybody had to work. So there was a maintenance crew that was usually older boys that had access to, back in the 90s, they had the actual keys and they had master keys on their maintenance crew. Well, if some of the boys, then they went into town and they would make extra keys.
Copies.
And then as the kids were going through, they would deem which kids were deemed worthy to hand off the master key to.
Wow.
Most of them. And they were sneaking out and, you know, all sorts of stuff too. So there was a lot that, I guess in my mind, I wasn't just in survival for so long, but now looking back on it, it really was hard because you're away from your parents. You're made to think that, you know, this is the only way that you could not be deceived by the horrible world. And yet here are these people that are literally abusing you and the whole system is set up for indoctrination and trauma and all of that. And it just was.
So I assume that you got married to somebody then in the church.
I was just going to ask you that.
No. Okay.
I did not. I was a little rebel. The first time that I went to any schooling was my college years. And I went to become a court reporter. Mm-hmm. And I chose a school that, of course, none of the Adventist institutions offered that. And so I chose Lincoln, Nebraska, that had Union College, which is an Adventist institution that I had some friends that went there so that I could be close and could go, you know, to their church and things. But I met my husband at the college that I was going to, and he grew up Methodist. And before I got very serious with him, I sat him down and I said, you know, my faith is the most important thing to me. And we have the truth. And if you would just look at the Bible with me, that God will show you that. And if you don't have any interest in, you know, living a life like this, then I'm going to have to break up with you. He conformed for me and he got baptized after we were married, but because it was after we were married, like my longtime pastor wouldn't marry us because he wasn't yet a baptized Adventist, even though he professed and was learning and things like that. Like he wouldn't even marry us.
Wow.
Alisa, how old were you at this point?
At marriage?
Yeah.
21.
Okay.
Yep, 21. You know, we kind of started our life and had a couple of kids, and it was really important for us to also get a Christian school going in our little area, because that was the way it was supposed to be. You know, Ellen Wright wrote a lot about, you know, like if you don't, basically your kids are doomed if you don't send them to an Adventist institution. And which just, I mean, there was so much pressure for so much on so many things that she said, but, you know, we worked really hard to get a school going. And into the years of that kind of led me out in those 5 years, one of the things that happened, we worked and worked and worked to raise all this money and to be able to get an Adventist school teacher that is with the institution instead of just like hiring a school teacher. And a friend and I raised a ton of money, and we were kind of the poster child for our Rocky Mountain Conference, which is just this entire area, because we took a very small church from nothing and raised all this money and created a school and had all of the kind of how to do this and how to fundraise and how to, you know, admissions and how to, like, we did very well. And then we had a treasurer that came in. There was a family that came in, and turns out she ended up embezzling all of the money, and it just devastated us. And the worst part was my friend was 8 months pregnant. And when we found out, she was so upset, of course, that, you know, and we took all of the responsibility off of her, and we had to go through, you know, the insurance, all of the rigmarole. And we called Adventist Risk Management, which is kind of their attorneys, if you will. And they told us kind of what to do. Well, once we did that, then, you know, unfortunately, my friend went into early labor and her baby almost died. His kidneys exploded and her baby almost died. And it turns out that there's some flap that didn't grow right, that usually grows late in pregnancy. And he still has problems to this day, but he did survive, thank goodness. But that was just devastating, not only with the, you know, the court case and all of that. Once we went through the process of the court case, then Adventist Risk Management came back to us and said that you guys need to not say a word about anything that happened and not go to the court case. You guys weren't the victims, that we as the Rocky Mountain Conference are the victims, because we are the owner of your school. And they came and like said, like, cease and desist from making any sort of a victim statement or anything like that.
So
at that point, I didn't care. I did it anyway.
Oh, I was, was that a control tactic? Sorry. What was the, do you know what their reason for that was?
They used us to do all of the insurance stuff, and all they wanted was the money back to do what they needed to do for the insurance. But then the bigger thing was that you cannot talk about the church. It can't go out in the papers. It can't, like, we can't just say like anything abuse. Bad.
Right. Yes. They just don't want that. It's about their not tarnishing their reputation.
Right.
So
nothing.
Was this to be, so you had mentioned it was about 5 years that began your exit. Was this the beginning of that?
The cult leader was the beginning of that. There was a smaller embezzlement that happened before this bigger embezzlement happened. So that was a couple of things. And I had a guy kind of out of the blue write me this letter of love and adoration. And it was it was really hard, because this was like my brother's best friend. And I didn't even know the guy. Like I remember one day we were in a board meeting and he was sitting across from me, and he actually looked me in the eyes during this one interaction at this board meeting. And I remember thinking to myself, he must not hate me. I thought he hated me because he would never look me in the eyes at all. And this one day he actually looked me in the eyes. And within that week, he wrote this letter of just love and all this stuff that just blew our lives apart, because we're a small church. This is my brother's best friend, and I don't really have that great of a...
And you're married, and he knew that.
And I'm married, and he knew that, and we were all... His wife was a beautiful woman.
He was married, too.
He was married, and she was my friend. You know, like, it was such an egregious... It was horrible, horrible.
It was inappropriate.
It was inappropriate, and it could have destroyed my marriage. Thank goodness my husband knew, like, this was all him. And in the email that he wrote me, he actually says, like, I've already told my wife and she knows this is 100% me. And, you know, but it was horrible because I played the piano at church. My husband would be up front as like an elder and lead out in services. And we didn't know if they were going to be there, because in Adventism, like, you come to church no matter what. You can't just not be there. And we were so uncomfortable. We reached out to the pastors. We reached out to our conference to try to get a mediation or help or something. We were completely shut down and ignored. And then, yeah, it was
anything done to him, or was he taken aside and spoken to?
No, nothing. They wouldn't deal with it.
Of course not. So walk us through. So was that the beginning of the?
That was one of the things that happened.
Okay.
So the cult leader, this instance with this man happened. We had a small embezzlement happen. We had the big embezzlement happen. And then the end of that five-year period, so this was over 5 years of period, and we were still, the first thing that happened was this cult leader, where we were all, my trust of people was already obliterated. So once this happened with this man, I was just barely starting to try to trust people again and kind of get my bearings about me when this happened with this man. And we were still not thinking clearly anyway. And then we had, I was asked to be on, because our school had done so well when it was doing well before this had happened with the embezzled. I had been asked to be on Rocky Mountain K-12 school board that was on kind of a bigger level, where they would fly me to conferences and things. And they were trying to get information on, like, how we had done so well, and especially for rural areas, that if we're supposed to all have Adventist schools, you know, for all of these areas, like, how did we do it? And I became involved in that. And up until then, I was still thinking, like, this is still God's church. It's just people that are sinful people, like we all are, you know, that are doing bad things in it. But it doesn't mean that the church is wrong. And I still was pretty dogmatic about that through this, until this last experience with the conference. Like, I was actually in the upper echelons of the leadership of the church. And they twist your words and they, what's it called?
Gaslighting.
Gaslighting. There was like all sorts of stuff that was happening that, I mean, through this whole time, I was like, I thought that I was just going insane. Like, we would say one thing, my friend and I, you know, we would say one thing, and then they would, it was terrible. And I really felt like when that finally happened, that there was no reason for it. There was no rhyme or reason for it at all, except that I think what it probably was, now looking back, is that they didn't want to lose their jobs, because Adventist education is a pretty big institution. And as are Adventist hospitals and things, like the health hospitals and universities are really big in Adventism, actually. And I think that we were touching on things that they knew that they were not doing correctly, and they didn't want to lose their jobs and didn't want to look bad. And my friend and I were pretty, you know, we were trying to make it so that it was doable to be able to have these so important Adventist elementary schools all around, that this whole system was set up so we couldn't be able to do that at all. And we were trying to remedy that. But yeah, I just totally got backstabbed by the higher up of this K-12 board. And the good thing was, is it wasn't a huge deal on the grand scheme of all the other things that we had been through. But when that happened, it exposed the upper echelons of the inside of the church, the leadership of the church, to me. And when that happened, I realized, oh, like, the Holy Spirit is not with this church at all. It's all abuse. It's all shutting you up. It's all silence. It's, if you call out anything that is wrong, you become the problem. You know, like, if you call out right, that there's an abuser, you then become the abuser. And that's spiritual abuse 101 and cult tactics and all of it. And so that's when I just said enough. And this, you know, I'm not going to go along with a church that is.
And your husband was on board with this? Obviously, you must have spoken to him.
He was. And, you know, I am so lucky that I am paired with this man, because he, through all of this, he was in it with me, like, questioning things. And, you know, we talked about a lot of things. And when something would happen, we would try to deal with it, and we would get slapped down together. And, you know, thank goodness, when I stepped back from church, he still went with the kids because he didn't want, my kids were about 6 and 9 when I ultimately left, and he didn't want there to be a lot of up and down and us be wishy-washy on if I was maybe going to go back. But he quickly learned that there was no going back. And then, and this, that was at the beginning of, you know, all of the indoctrination being peeled away too. And so once we went through that process and saw all of the evil that is really a part of this, then there was no going back.
And how many years ago was this?
That was in 2011. So 14 years, 10.
So you've been out for about 14.
And I think that it took me about 10 years to really feel like I understood all of what Adventism was and all of the traumas and abuses that really were happening within it. It took a long time.
Well, I'm just going to say that that's true love. A man who joins a cult for you and then leaves the cult with you.
Leaves the cult. Yeah. I don't think we heard that.
He, you know, like somehow he doesn't hate my family. The hardest thing with this is that we literally live in the same area with my family, my brother and his wife, my mom and dad.
And they're still in.
And they are all still in. And everybody we knew were Adventists. So when you leave, I mean, your foundation, my foundation,
crumbles.
I knew nobody, like, I mean, it was hard. It was a hard transition, but I'm so thankful.
And that's by design, because it makes it harder to leave.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially with, and Melody, you guys kept the Sabbath too, didn't you? Saturday?
Yes. We were Sabbath keeping Saturday, Friday night to sundown, Saturday night to sundown. Yep.
And when that's such a, like for Adventists, like it's the seventh day Adventist, seventh day is that Sabbath is the number one thing. And so I remember, you know, when we were even talking about a lot of this and when my husband and I were really hashing out like all of this, the thing that kept us there the longest was just that where would we go? That there are no other. Right. And the Adventist doctrine for Sunday keepers are that they have the mark of the beast. Like that is the end time doctrine and teaching, is that all Sunday keepers are Babylon and have the mark of the beast, and only Sabbath keepers have the seal of God. So
ironically, and I've never shared this on the show before, but ironically, one of the churches I attempted to visit and go to after leaving my cult was a Seventh-day Adventist church. And
really?
I only went one time, but it was because the beliefs were aligned so much with a lot of the things and paralleled so much with a lot of the things from my own cult that I'm like, well, maybe I could feel comfortable there. But I just had so many walls up. It was like, oh, no. I couldn't do it. I couldn't feel comfortable anywhere. I'm like, I just don't think organized religion is for me anymore.
Yeah.
So that brings, that's a good segue, Melody, into asking where Elisa is today in her faith.
Yes,
are you... do you belong to a church, or did you walk? Did you try to join other churches like Melody, or did you finally just, you and your husband said, we'll do this on our own?
Much like Melody, we did try a few other churches very hesitantly. We were very wounded in that same way. Not
of course,
you know, all of the realizing that everything that you believed in is a lie and all of that. And peeling that off, but the trauma of those 5 years, I was really jaded and really broken and really obliterated into nothing. And so we just took our time. And when I walked away, I said, I am not going to pray. I am not going to read my Bible. I am not going to listen to, if somebody says some statement that is, you know, even if it is true or whatever, but if it's said in a way of like, you should be doing this, I'm not going to listen. It's out of my brain. I will not take that into my heart at all. And I probably was like that for 2 or 3 years until I really started to miss a relationship with God. But I refused to do anything if it was something like a manipulation, or if I didn't feel it in my heart, like I was being pulled into that or called into that with pure love, I said absolutely not to it. And that's how I was for quite a while.
And
joined church eventually.
Oh, good. Okay. So I was just going to say that you, because I have done it, you can have a relationship with God without a brick and mortar or organization, a religious organization. So you believe in God, and
I do. I really do. And since then, I don't know. I do have a very, very strong relationship with God, and it's one of love and grace and realizing that none of us can be saved on our own. And we are all, you know, we are all broken people that need a savior. I do believe that.
Do you worship on your own or do you go somewhere?
Go to a church now.
Okay.
Yeah. Good. We did find a church. We were a part of a church for several years and then they kind of started getting a little possessive. Uh-huh. And my husband and I, you know, you can see that like blinking from afar. And so we exited because like organized religion denominations are not for us at all. And if we see any sort of, like in this case, like the pastor kind of started being possessive about his denomination or his church.
Yeah.
And we got out of there kind of quick. And we are now a part of a church that has just freedom and you can
come and go as you please. Yeah.
You're not made to feel like you have to be, you know, all of that. And it's
so weird. It's not a cult.
It's not a cult.
So much like my experience when I would go into these churches after I left and try to go into these other organized religions, I described it as I went in with my both hands up and my hands out, like back up and stay away from me. Don't tell me what to do. Don't ask me for my money. Don't tell me how to pray. Don't tell me what the Bible means. Yeah. Don't tell me what to read. Don't tell me how to interpret anything. I just went in like, and it was almost like I described it to other people when trying to explain it. It was like I'd come out of an abusive relationship. And so I didn't trust. I was like very similar to that, to where you've been traumatized. And I'm like, everybody just back up for me because I'm looking for a reason to walk right out of this place.
Yes.
And I found one every time.
Yeah. We have to begin to wrap up. I have one more question and then I think Melody will ask her final question. And this is kind of personal, so feel free to say you don't want to answer, but where are your children in all of this?
Right now?
Yes. They must be older now.
Yes.
So they were brought up in the Seventh-day Adventist, and then you pulled them out of there, and then you joined another church, and you pulled them out of there, and then you joined another church that you're in now. So they must be kind of confused.
Thankfully, because once we left, we talked to them a lot. We talked to them about the manipulation, about the gaslighting, about different things, and really talked in depth about how we saw this as wrong and that you need to feel free in your relationships and all of that. We really talked a lot to the kids and we didn't force them to go with us. In fact, like my son, so my daughter is 22 and she is in Nashville. She's a musician, graduated college last year and is living there now. And my son is at the University of Wyoming. And, you know, they both have a belief system that is different from their father and mine. You know,
they have their own. They have their own.
They do. They do believe in God, and especially my daughter, like I think, you know, she does want to have a weekly find a church and walk down that path. And I think my son he believes in God. He's trying to figure things out as most college students do. But I am so proud of how they navigated all of those years because it was hell. It was hell on our family. It was terrible. Like they were around grandparents that when all of these things splintered apart, it changed everything. And they still love their family and are just wonderful human beings. And I'm so proud of them to not go off the deep end with all of the things that we went through.
Good for you.
Family. But I think it was because we spoke. So my husband and I talked to them all the time about everything. We probably were a little too open. I don't know if Melody's been on my TikTok page, I am a little, sometimes I love inappropriate humor kind of, or like edgy stuff because I lived in dissociation and just shut your brain off for so long that I'm finding that kind of in your face, like almost raw and real stuff. It keeps me grounded. And it keeps me in my mind instead of just, you know, like dissociating like so many years. So anyway, they're
wonderful
human
beings. Great. I'm very happy to hear that. That's good news. And that's really what, you know, I think that's our job as parents is to raise our kids to be independent and feel confident enough to be able to make their own decisions and things like that. And that's always, you know, as a mom, you can always be proud of that because or parents in general, I mean, you and your husband, because it isn't an easy thing to do to raise your kids to feel confident enough to make their own decisions like that.
Exactly.
Especially when you're coming from a situation where you were born and raised in this, and that was all you had ever known. So
absolutely.
But the last question we're going to end with is the question, do you have any advice for somebody who might be finding themselves in a situation where they think the religion that they're part of might be a cult, or they're starting to see some red flags? What would be the advice you would give to somebody who might be having some doubts?
You know, probably the biggest thing for me is I had a friend tell me that if you can't question your religion, then perhaps your religion should be kept questioned. Oh, and that
I haven't heard that one. That's very good.
That slapped me across the face when I was first kind of really starting to look at some of these doctrines that weren't backed by the Bible at all, any way, shape, or form. And if there is, now I recognize that angst and that cognitive dissonance in my heart as that, you know, that there's something wrong here. And it's hard when you've grown up in it, because that's all you've ever known.
So you'll know, yeah.
Yes.
You're used to that. You're just that anxiety in your heart. But I definitely got to where when I had my own prayer time or whatever, or I was in only the Bible, like I felt this peace. And then when I would go back to church and just only read, you know, like our indoctrinated materials, and then I would feel that. And that started getting deeper, like bigger and bigger to me, that to where I couldn't ignore it anymore. So the first piece of advice is, if there is anything that is churning in your heart or your soul or your mind, that I don't believe God is a God of confusion. So that's always automatically some sort of
red flag. Yeah.
Red flag. There is something there that is deceptive, that is misinterpretations, that is trying to get control over some piece of you. So you need to really look into that and to allow that. And the second piece of advice would be, for me, there's not a lot of cult survivors, I guess, that have come out of a cult that still have a belief system. There's really not. It's really hard to kind of find that, I've found. And so I want to say that there is still, like, if God is all truth, He will be all truth through all of the BS too. Like he will illuminate His truth through everything else. And you can trust that. And you don't have to, if somebody else is saying, oh, well, but you know, don't, you're going to be deceived, or you're going to be, if you're even questioning or thinking something for yourself, then that's a manipulation tactic. And if God is who He says He is, and if I believe that He wants to have a relationship with me, then He will. And I don't need to, there's no prescribed way to do that at all. And so there is also faith after, there can be faith after leaving a cult too.
Of course.
And I'm proud of that. Like, I'm really, I'm happy. I'm happy to have kept that intact. And now it's just free. It's total freedom and love. And I'm glad that I have somebody that I can rely on and I can cry to, and, you know, I'm glad for that.
I can appreciate that. Absolutely.
The Catholic Church is not a cult, but I grew up in it almost 25 years of my life, and I'm double that age now. And I have my faith, but it's my own, and and I have my own relationship with my higher power. So where can our audience find you on TikTok? Because I hear you have some wonderful videos, so we'd like to send them there.
I am at ADPXSDA.
And we'll put that in the show notes. Yeah,
that will be in the show notes.
The reason why I have such a cryptic name, I guess, is all of my family and friends are still in the church, and I don't want to openly just slap them in the face with why I left. And
understandable.
I love them, you know, and if they happen to come across this, then
it was meant to be,
for grace. It was meant, and I am totally trusting in that. All my other social media, I have my name on, but this one, I'm keeping it like this. And if they happen to be there, then I'm going to trust that there was a reason that they came across it.
Yeah.
There you go. Maybe they'll learn.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Alisa, for coming on the show. We so appreciate having you here to share your story with us.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
Yes. Thank you. What an enlightening story. And I love the endings. Yeah. Some great to think about questioning your religion. I never heard that one before. And that's great. So thank you.
Thank you.
And once again, we want to thank Alisa so much for coming on the show and sharing her story with us. Andrew, I did want to touch on one thing that I didn't get a chance. The conversation shifted, but I didn't get a chance when we were talking about confessions and the idea of And she was talking about how the Seventh-day Adventist teaches that if you haven't, you know, asked for forgiveness for your sins, you're going to die. And it made me think of my, when I got married, my current husband, his dad, they were Catholic. And he kept on us and on us. He wanted us when our first son together was born, because I had one. So I had my son and then we had two together. When our middle son was first born, he kept saying, aren't you going to have him baptized for original sin? Aren't you going to? And I'm like, and he was just riding on us. Every time we'd come to visit, he kept asking us. And finally, I just said, Dad, why is this so important to you? And he's like, well, do you know if that baby gets in a car accident and he dies tomorrow, he's going to hell? And I said, okay, Dad, I don't know about the God that you worship, but the God that I worship would never send a innocent baby to hell for a decision made by his parents. I said, so. Well,
okay. That's what I was taught in the Catholic Church, that you're baptized so Satan can't grab your soul as a child. Right. And that reminds me of the movie Damien. So there is that belief, if you're not baptized, your soul is up for grabs by demonic entities.
Yes.
And so again,
teaching, but it's one. And, but I will tell you, after I said that to him, he never asked us again to be baptized. It was a non-issue. It was not a conversation anymore, but I just found that kind of interesting.
Yeah. And my little quick feedback on Elisa. Yeah. I found her to be very well spoken. I just enjoyed that conversation, and she seems to have a pretty good head on her shoulders. And I like the way she was able to get out of the cult with no issues. Like she just said,
she did say it took her 10 years to deconstruct, but
she had, and that's not uncommon, right? No. We've heard how many how many years did it take you? So
exactly. But Elisa, she did an amazing job, and we so appreciate her coming on the show and sharing her story with us. And we also want to thank all of you for tuning into Cultimatum. Your support is always greatly appreciated. And if you enjoyed today's episode, if you could just take a moment to rate and review us on platforms such as Apple and Spotify, it does really help us out, especially the ratings. Hopefully 5 stars. And don't forget to follow, share, and keep listening to all of our latest episodes.
You can also connect with us by joining our Facebook group, Cultimatum Podcast, where we dive deeper into these important topics.
And you can find us on additional social media platforms, including Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok, YouTube, and Threads.
If you have a personal experience with cults or human trafficking that you'd like to share, please reach out to us at cultimatumpodcast@gmail.com.
And if you are an ex-cult member and need of additional support, you can consider joining the Cult Escape and Recovery Group on Facebook.
And if you want to hear more of me on my other podcast, the Digital Dating Podcast with Anonymous Andrew, it can be found on the platform that you're listening to this podcast on, Apple, Spotify, and Pandora, and all those other. And apparently I wasn't on Amazon Podcast. So now I'm on Amazon Podcast. If you'd like to help us with the cost of maintaining the podcast, you can show your support through the Buy Us a Cup of Coffee link in our show notes. Every little bit helps in our mission to spread awareness about cults and human trafficking. And to the audience, as of this recording, we have received zero. So help. Little kick in the butt there. And
as always, stay safe, stay informed, and remember, you are not alone.